You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone.
Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World, Broadway Podcast Network, and Broadway On Demand. I'm your host, Tony Yazbek, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Laura Osnes.
Hey, y'all. 10 minutes ago, I saw you. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Hey, y'all. It's so good to be here with y'all and my lovely...
And Maul.
And what?
I don't know. So you say me all would be Maul?
Yeah. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm well. I'm well.
You sound fine.
I'm grateful. Thank you.
Yes, yeah, you have to, you know, be grateful for the little things these days.
Lonnie used to say that you sound fine about, like, whenever I would be, like, I guess we'd be, like, in rehearsal for something when I was his assistant on various shows that he was directing, and would I talk shit about a performer in our shows? Now that I'm saying that, I'm like, I feel like I didn't do that, but there must have been some that we had like a running thing about. And like, I would like get him like going a little bit like down the negative road, and then he'd be like, she's great. She sings fine. And I don't know why years later when I would say that line back to him, thinking it was like a fond memory of the good old days, he would be like, don't be mean.
Don't be mean. Don't. She sings fine. I want us to somehow incorporate that into our daily banter. Oh, yeah. She sings fine.
She's great. She sings fine. Nobody was like fine. In one breath. He was like, she's great. She sings fine.
Who's someone that you would say just sings fine?
Oh, lots of people. I don't know, like, it's not even an insult. It's like, you know, who sings fine is like Catherine Zeta-Jones, Katie Huffman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Meryl Streep. Honestly, frankly, Sutton Foster.
I do not dispute that.
I mean, to me, this isn't really even what Lonnie meant. I would say someone sings fine to mean that, like, they're solid. They're just not, there's nothing about their voice that I am, like, hard for.
Yeah. I feel ya.
Unlike some people.
Yes. And if any listeners of ours are hard for Sutton, we support that.
Do you know who I am like weirdly hard for right now?
I know, but tell me again.
No, you don't know. I haven't told you this.
Oh, not Elaine?
Well, that too, but that's not weird because I've been talking about it nonstop for like a month.
Right.
I'm like really weirdly into Tyne Daly's singing voice right now.
Really? I don't even know if I could pick it out of a lineup.
It's so, she's like, have an egg roll, Mr. Goldstone.
I love it with a bit of a, oh.
And like I know they she has talked and like people have talked about how she like wasn't in good voice on like the Gypsy cast recording and how she like sounded much better like most of the run than she does on the album. But I like love her on the album. Like I feel like just vocally Tyne Daly might be my favorite Mama Rose.
No, no, no. You are drunk. You would not. You will not keep that up. You will not say that tomorrow.
Okay, let's just check in about this on the regular.
This is a new segment. Do we like Tyne Daly's singing voice?
No, like, I'm sure I'll always like her singing voice, but I want you to check in whether I will still stand behind this statement that vocally alone, vocally speaking, she is my favorite vocal performance as Mama Rose, judging by the vocals.
Even more than Patty?
Well, here's the deal with Patty. It's like, it's a little unfair to compare Patty's vocal in Gypsy to anything, because I feel like I am to Patty's vocal in Gypsy the way Rose is to June's career.
Gotcha.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Yes, it scans.
And like, so it's just like very fraught. Like, no matter what gifts Patty gives me in her performance as Mama Rose vocally, I'm always like, oh, but like, we're, didn't we talk about a Nintendo? I'm just like, I'm always going to be just like nickel and diming her for like random, like, and you can't even please me. I'm like, no, I wanted you to go up at the end of Some People. No, I wanted you to slide down like Bernadette. Like, I just, I don't even know what the fuck I want, you know?
Yeah. Well, that luckily we have so many to choose from.
Tyne Daly as Mama Rose. I'm always just like, why the fuck do I even have this? Oh,
that's why. I don't even know if I've ever listened to it all the way through. She's definitely the Rose I know least.
I highly recommend it.
I'm going to have to take the journey. I mean, I know the, of course, the Merman and the Patty, and I've heard the Bernadette, but I recently got the Angela one on vinyl, and I really love that one right now.
Yeah. I mean, the Angela and Tyne are kind of in a category together in a way, because I feel like Patty and Bernadette and Bette and Betty and Linda Lavin, like any of these like musical theater actresses who basically like grew up, or I don't know, Linda Lavin's older than she looks, like, you know, came of age, like aware of Gypsy and like, you know, like they all like played like June or Louise, like when they were a kid, you know, like they've always dreamed about this. So they're like, their Rose is a little like their like prom dress or like their wedding day. And it's like, they're in their own way a little bit, you know, I mean, the same way I would be, you know, they're just like, they're like, this is how I'm going to sing Some People. I really want to. Whereas, like, Tyne Daly's like, oh, you want me to come in here? Okay. Like, you know, she's like, she don't know, you know? And, like, she's like, I thought I saw Gypsy, but it was actually Dear World.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And, like, there, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, and Merman was just like, I'm just going to say whatever the fuck comes out of my mouth, and you people write it down. You know, and they were like, exactly. That's Gypsy. But, like, I mean, not that she improvised, but you know what I mean? Like, it just, like, I feel like Merman just kind of like defined it, you know, but like, but Angela.
Well, and she was the first, so there was no like nothing to go off of, really.
Yeah, yeah. And Angela, I think, was very like, well, I'll approach it like a text. You know?
Yeah, start with the text, dearie.
You know, and you know, and, I mean, Patty says she starts with the text too, which is true. But you've got to believe that there's some gay man like in skinny jeans in Patty's head being like,
oh, for sure.
Being like, I don't want to interrupt you or anything, but can I just say what Bernadette did here? Okay, I'll wait.
Yeah, there is that. That's like the devil and the angel on Patty's shoulder. It's like the devil is the gay man in skinny jeans.
But like, so is the angel.
The angel.
Well,
speaking of speaking of Bette, who, and I told you last night as we watched this together, this was one of the, besides Bernadette, this was the only other Corin stream we've ever watched together in the same room. And you know, we were trying to save most of it for the pod.
I was so scared. I was so scared when we first started watching and we were like, we were like taking our notes, but we were like talking. I was like, this is a fucking mistake. This is not good.
I know. And I had to like hold off, and I had such like, you know, blue balls the whole time, because I was like wanting to like comment on it. And I was like, nope, save it, Didi, save it.
I had like a whole philosophy going in my head that I was like, you know, if I say something, then I'm not going to write it down. And if Daniel thinks it was that funny or special, maybe he'll remember it and bring it up tomorrow. Mm. But like, this is a lesson in me just like not like cherishing, you know, kill your darlings.
Yes. What does that mean?
That's like an expression they say, kill your darlings, that like when you're like writing, or I think it has to do originally with writing, but I guess it can apply to any kind of like art or creativity. Mm. That like, don't like cherish, you know, be like, oh, I got this laugh doing this one bit 2 weeks ago. Mm. So I have to every single night slavishly make sure I get that, you know, like just be free and, you know, serve the text in the moment. I don't know. I don't know if that's the best definition, but
yeah, I gotcha. Anyway, what was I saying?
Well, we still haven't said that what we are corn streaming today is Diva Las Vegas.
Starring Miss Bette Midler, the divine Miss M herself.
But I wish it was Tyne Daly. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you don't mean that.
I do not mean that. Not at all.
So this is, I mean, it's so perfect. Well, that
it's it's her 1996 concert.
Yes, yeah, so perfect we're doing it right after First Wives Club, because Bette is in peak form, physically, vocally. Her career is
her
skyrocketing.
Her hair, clothes, her makeup, her harlettes, her material, her everything. Marriage, her relationship with her daughter. It's all
her relationship
there.
With carbs, yes, everything.
Yes.
And I'd never seen this before. You know, I had seen, and I told you this last night, I've seen Bette at the Baths 1,000 times. I've, you know, Live at Last, I know really well. But this kind of later Bette phase, and not even later, like really peak Bette.
But I mean, how do you even say peak Bette? Like, peak Bette is like, Bette is so multi-peaked.
I guess I'm just thinking chronologically, like, you know, there's... I think of like before this as being, she was a little more edgy, like a little more of like a, you know, a rocker ish. And then after this, it's like, she came back and did Hello Dolly. You know, she,
I mean, the edginess pretty much died after like 82 or even earlier really, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, in this one, you know, her big hit songs are kind of these easy listening adult contemporary hits, like, well, From a Distance.
A good reason to call this peak Bette, and maybe the reason that I wanted us to do this as opposed to one of her other concerts, is because, you know, in one hand, you kind of want to get her as young as possible because you want to get her as close as possible to that edgy, you know, rock and roll and like, you know, sort of counterculture comedian, whatever that she started as. And you also, with singers, generally speaking, you want them younger in the peak of their voice, you know? And, but with a diva, you also want them late enough in their career that they have already had all their big hit songs, you know? Like,
very true. Yeah. You know, so they have like, all of them to sing.
Everybody loves Liza with a Z, but she doesn't have New York, New York in Liza with a Z, you know,
yeah.
Or The World Goes Round. And so this is Bette. She already has From a Distance, and she already has The Wind Beneath My Wings, not to mention the older stuff like The Rose and Do You Want to Dance and, you know, whatever. I mean, the truth is really Bette didn't have any hit songs after this.
And I was trying to think, all of her big films were around this time or before. Like, did she have any other big movies after that?
No, I mean, that there was a couple of flops.
Like The Stepford Wives.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and even that was an ensemble thing. I mean, you know, she really, she was certainly at the peak of her career here. And, you know, if anybody would like to make an argument that a different concert was her peak as a concert performer, I'm sure that would be a valid argument. But you can certainly make a valid argument for this, because I certainly felt last night, and I knew because this was the Bette Midler concert that I watched religiously, you know, in college and like was obsessed with. However, I hadn't watched it in, you know, at least 20 years or something. And I went in knowing I was going to love it, but I loved it even more. I mean,
yeah, I really loved it too. And I was so, even though I know Bette pretty well, at least her recordings and her movies, I was so surprised at how just, she's such a workhorse, you know, she's so energetic up there. She's running around the stage. I mean, even the banter after some of these big numbers with a lot of choreography, she's out of breath, but somehow she like uses it to just complete the picture and the energy of the moment. And I just was really impressed by her stamina.
I realized, I'm glad you said the thing about being out of breath, and it has to do with her stamina too, that Bette in a way is like the perfect marriage of Barbara and Liza.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because like Barbara to me is someone that's all about being polished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Bette is actually the most polished performer in the world.
Yeah, she's very polished.
But Bette is smart enough and wise enough, or at least listens to her collaborators in a way that Barbara doesn't, or I don't know what. You know, but yeah. Barbara's idea of polished is some stupid, tacky, dumb idea. What she thinks would be the right perfect show is actually moronic, you know?
Yeah.
And Bette knows that the perfect polished show is not one that hides her humanity.
Yes.
It's one that just makes all the smartest, best choices at displaying her humanity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like Liza, Bette knows all those showbiz secrets, all the ways to max get the furthest distance on the least amount of gas, you know, when the voice isn't going to be there, how to phrase the line to get through, you know, she knows all those Liza tricks. But the difference is that where Liza basically is like her mom gave her like, you know, $40 to like go out to like the like, I don't know, to Disneyland or something. And she blew it all like on cotton candy as soon as she got there. And then the rest of the day had no money. You know, Bette is somebody that absolutely knew exactly when she was going to need every single dollar and made it last, you know.
And get it planned.
So, you know, where Bette uses all those kind of like Liza showbiz tricks, she uses them in a more polished way that is just like, you know, it's never.
When it's so economical, you know, it's like the, it's like, you know, it's like in vocal performance, they say, you know, how you have to learn how to use your breath, you know, and it's not about forcing it. It's not about, feeling like you're working hard. It's just about the economy and how you're, you know, the amount of effort and breath you're putting out in a streamlined fashion, you know, and over time. And Bette seems to really pace herself, and it's, you know, it's not like Liza who's, you know, in one number, she's doing a sprint, you know, a 20-yard dash and jumping over a hurdle or whatever. It's like, cross country or something. Bette is running the long race. She's doing a 5K. And like you're saying, the tricks, the whole time I couldn't help but think about all those old Hollywood stars like Marilyn, like Jane Russell, who weren't dancers. You know, someone like Liza is a trained dancer, like an amazing dancer, but Bette, she gets by on these tricks with a lot of, you know, arm movements and like her funny little Bette walk and her hand motions. I mean, but it's all so precise and choreographed, but it's never dull, or it never comes off as,
because
as cheesy.
All her physical movement, just like her singing, is so authentic to her and so expressive. I mean, the greatest thing about Bette's, I mean, I don't know. I'm just so in love with her.
Yes, me too.
That walk is so, I just love watching her move, you know, and I really love watching her sing. Oh, and the, such a pleasure for me about seeing her do a show, a whole show, is that she, when she gets to all of her, her songs that are her songs, you know, whether they're her number one, you know, major pop hits, like From a Distance and The Rose or whatever, or whether they are just songs she's done on an album that might not, you know, be as famous, but as a fan, I know her version. I love watching how she's going to sing it live, because it's economical, but it's also artful, and it's it's really, I love watching where she's going to spend that gas, spend that breath in the song, you know, mm-hmm. where it's going to, you know, when she sings The Wind Beneath My Wings, you know, I mean, that's a song that I've sung in karaoke. Why have I sung that in karaoke? I'll tell you why. Because like when I started going to karaoke, you know, in San Francisco in the 90s, most places didn't have pages and pages of show tunes like they do nowadays. Mm-hmm. So songs that I knew all the words to were much more limited because they didn't have all those Broadway tracks. So I had to choose the very few pop songs that I actually knew all the words to. So that included Wind Beneath My Wings, right?
Right.
So that's
right.
A very vocally taxing song to sing. Now, maybe it's a good key for Bette as an alto and it doesn't go to like crazy high mm-hmm. notes, you know, and then down the octave, it was like a more comfortable key for me who can't really sing, you know, but like, but still, it has those big vocal lines. And as like the amateur, like idiotic singer that I am, from the very first chorus, I'd be going, fly, fly, you know, just like giving it all my all, you know?
Yeah.
And, but you watch Bette and it's, you know, it's so, I don't want to say careful because that makes it sound like it's not, full of feeling, mm-hmm. but it's very well considered. And she knows yeah. where it's, you know, someone like Liza, you know, or even like a Patty or a Bernadette or whoever, you know, they'll spend their breath in the sense of you obviously can't do that for the entire song. So you've just got to like build the number, which makes it more exciting anyway, to start smaller and gradually get bigger, mm-hmm. you know, but with Bette, it's like, she'll really make choices where, you know,
yeah.
They'll just be lines that are mostly breathy, you know, or she'll use a lot of like the background vocals, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost, I'm trying to think of how to compare it to like a painting or like a style of painting. It's like Bette is so, I don't know. It's so nuanced and there's so many different shades, you know. It's, I don't know. It's not like Liza's like a Jackson Pollock, like splatter painting, you know, that's like, I don't know, like a Monet or something, or something that's more impressionistic. But yeah, I mean, it's truly, it's thrilling because, you know, someone like Barbara.
By the way, if we're talking about the divas as paintings, Liza is 100% a Warhol.
Yeah. I mean, totally on those. So, I mean, if we're talking about someone like Barbara, I mean, Barbara's so, at one time, she had, like, the greatest voice ever, and so she really kind of depended on that for, like, these really unnecessary riffs on so much stuff, and, you know, just trying to use that as, like, the moneymaker, you know, but what yeah. Bette does is that she really, you're hanging on every word,
yes,
you know,
you are. Yeah.
And you're really going along with her as she's telling this tale, as she's singing this song. Whereas Barbara, it's, I mean, you kind of said it last night, which maybe this is a good, you know, transition, but I loved seeing Bette last night on screen because you could see everything she was doing from her hands to her eyes to
yeah.
her, and you could of course hear her. But like Barbara, you know, I've only ever seen her at Staples Center, Barclays Center, Madison Square. It's, you know, from the cheap seats far away, but mm-hmm. you really just need to hear the voice, you know, you don't really, it's not about watching every move she makes because most of the time she's just sitting on that stool.
Right. Okay. Well, let's get into it. So, I just want to say from the very beginning, I could not be fucking happier with the entrance. I mean, it starts
yeah.
off, there's like some kind Star of a flower entrance. Or something like, well,
yeah.
first the dancers come out mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. I don't remember what the music was that led into I Look Good. Was it? Oh, because she starts singing Friends.
Yeah, know? She just sings but like so a
she,
little bit.
So she is like flying, like, you know, halfway to the ceiling, hidden, you know, revealed behind this rose, singing a slow ballad, you know, intro of Friends.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and then it goes, you know, and she's lowered down and she comes out, including right there, she gives you the little Bette waddle strut.
Yes, immediately. She gives
I mean, what
she
is that
it
walk?
You.
It's part Mick Jagger, part like Shelley I mean, Winters. It's like,
and it's almost like it's a little moonwalky, not in the fact that it moves backward, but it's just like the way she coordinates her legs, kind of one goes out and then the other one goes back, and they're kind of like, you know, back and forth. It's like a little bit moonwalky.
It's moonwalky in the sense that like her body seems to glide into the new location. It's almost like her legs are just choreography, but she's actually like on a like electronic device that's shifting her position.
And the whole time I kept thinking, it looks like when Bette walks across the stage and moves, it's like from the waist down, she's like a different person. And then with like the big wig and like the big smile, sometimes it's like from the neck up, she's a different person too.
Yeah. Also, I just have to say right from the get-go, I don't know if I'm mad at HBO or I'm mad at Bette Midler. I don't know whose fault it is that this fucking concert that aired on HBO is not available professionally. We have to watch a fucking grainy ass Daily Motion link, or you can watch it on YouTube with like, you know, some kind of, I don't know if it's Russian or some Cyrillic language, like subtitles, like, and they're all scratchy and crappy. And, you know, what is the problem? Why is this not available for streaming or purchase or download, or what is the issue?
Yeah, that is very shocking.
I love this opening number. I Look Good. I love this whole, one of the things I realized watching her, and I think it's part of the reason that I love this in some ways more than her edgier 1970s material.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in terms of the more like stand-up comedy type stuff, as far as like the stuff she says rather than sings, but it informs the singing. Cause for example, this song is very much in the thing, which is that I think in the 70s, it was a little more like she was like, I'm one of the cool kids on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and she would refer to herself kind of as like a sexy lady with like big titties that obviously men in the audience want to fuck.
Yeah.
And she never was that to me. That was never how I saw her. I always saw her as an old Jewish lady, like my mother or my grandmother or something. So I never could really identify with her that much as like a cool kid, like talking to me, like with the hip commentary. Mm-hmm. But here it's a little more like, it's me, your old friend, or like, you know, as Pixie would say, your cousin, Bette Midler, mm-hmm. you know, and she's like, you've known me for 40 years and here I am to check in with you because we haven't seen each other in a while. And so all this banter is sort of like, you know, even when she's doing this sort of almost hacky kind of like very stand-up-y material about like, and it's so 90s because it's so dated, about like, you know, I don't know, what is it, like portable phones and like
portable phones, the internet,
all that stuff, you know. And I still enjoy it because it's like, she's like, oh, the last time I did a televised concert was 1990 and this is 1996, so so much has changed, we have to catch up on, guys, you know.
I really
appreciate that. And the opening number just starts in that place. And I love this idea of I Look Good, because she does. Because she really is somebody that's been characterized somehow in her persona as like, you know, I don't know, fat, or maybe not fat, but like not what, you know, society deems is what a woman would look like to be attractive or something, you know. And here she just looks so fierce and just so in her body and just so sexy and fluid and just, you know.
Just, the tights, the high heels.
Yeah. And just, you know, I mean, however she looked in the 70s, you know, or even in the 60s, she certainly had never moved any more acrobatically and athletically and just, you know, fiercely than she does here. I mean, she's at a maximum physical form.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember feeling like so depressed about it, because like, I was like, Patti LuPone will never look or move this great. And I think Patti, by the way, is way more beautiful than Bette Midler.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, but just Bette's look, I mean, we make fun of the things she wears in the first half because it has this weird tail that hangs down.
Yeah, it's so
like,
bizarre.
It's like these, I don't know if it's like black stretchy material or black velvet or something, but it's like these like black kind of like stretchy, thick black tights, and then in the same fabric, this like short sleeved, kind of like sexy, well fit, like top that like drapes over her breasts and then kind of like hangs loosely around her midsection and then cuts off just below her kind of like ass level. Except in the back, it like goes down like with this weird tail.
And yeah, it's, I mean, it almost looks like a tassel that you'd put on like a curtain or something. I mean, it's like kind of the Carol Burnett Gone with the Wind curtain dress. It's like they made this shirt.
It's very subtle in this like black fabric or whatever. You know, it's almost, it's like, it's very much that 90s bullshit, like asymmetrical, like, oh, you know, it throws the eye and creates a longer line or something, you know. But, but it's a little whatever. But most of the time, you don't notice it. Most of the time, you just see her in this like chic, form-fitting, flattering, elegant, but also
black.
Like, you know, and like sometimes like this 90s thing where they try to have it both ways to be sort of chic and elegant, but also a little bit athleisure-ish. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the 90s idea of that doesn't gel, but this gels beautifully. It's exactly what you want her to be in. Even with like the strappy, like high-heeled, like platform sandals, it's just, it's everything I want a diva concert, especially a Bette Midler concert outfit to be.
Yeah, it's minimal, it's classy, but it's also, she can move in it.
Yeah, and but it's, I really love it, love it, love it.
So then is the next song Miss Otis Regrets?
Yes. And I realized, like, it's kind of funny because that album was 6 years old.
Yeah.
And it was a successful album. What's it called? Some People's Lives.
Some People's Lives.
You know, and it's the album that had From a Distance.
Mm-hmm.
But Miss Otis Regrets is not, I don't necessarily think of that as one of her, like, standards.
No. I mean, that's just a standard.
And she does stuff. There's a couple other tracks, songs she does in this concert that are kind of like that, that are just like songs she happens to have sung on an album, but they're certainly not one of like her signature songs. And I realized that's something else I love about Bette, is that like, you feel like all her albums, like as an artist, as a singer, when she recorded those albums, she chose those songs because they really meant something to her. Mm-hmm. And they still do. And whether they became a global, game-changing, number one pop hit like The Wind Beneath My Wings, or whether they're just an old standard she happened to cover on her album, they're a song that she loves, and that when she's putting together her concert almost a decade later, she might choose that song. As opposed to Barbara, who I feel like is just like in the game trying to make money, and she throws the pasta against the wall, and if the song's not a hit, she divorces herself from it and you'll never hear it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Or Patty, who's like, no, we did that song in that show. Now I don't ever want to see it again.
<It's> like, totally.
Like, oh, well, if you want me to do like Coulda, Woulda, Shoulda and Lady with the Torch in Rep, then you'll get all the songs. But like that song, you know, it's like not, it's not so, you know, it's more contained within this sort of theatrical framework. You know, whereas with Bette, I feel like it's really like she's, the concert could draw from any place in her long career.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's, you know, no better example than the next song, which is, as she says, did I sing the ballad yet? Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most.
I mean, but speaking of going back to her old hits, I love that she not only goes back to the old song hits, she goes back to her old punchline hits. I mean, that's from Live at Last, right? She's in the middle of like a long, like funny, like banter monologue. And she's like, did I sing the ballad yet? Was it wonderful?
Was it wonderful?
And here she says that just like as a throwback to that.
Yeah, which I was like, is she recycling that?
I mean, which I love. I think it was supposed to be like a comment on, like, you know, like a joke.
Totally.
But this audience, I mean, it's a little bit like misguided because like you're playing like this enormous arena.
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of bit that works better in an intimate like venue packed with just like mega fans, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously when you're Barbara or Bette or Cher or somebody, like any venue can be packed with mega fans because the whole world are your mega fans. But I think this level of like minutia might have been like an overreach.
Yeah, and in Vegas. I mean, it's it's not like she's doing this in, you know, lower Manhattan.
Exactly.
But this next song, The Ballad, Spring Can Really Hang Up the Most. This, I love this song so much. Betts was the first version I heard. And truly this song, I mean, Thighs and Whispers was really my true in with Betts. And that's what really made me a mega fan. But Spring Can Really Hang Up the Most, that was the first song I heard of hers that really got me interested on the ground level. And there's a whole orchestration behind it. It's again on Some People's Lives. And the way she sings this song is just so beautiful. I mean, her voice has never sounded better than on this song. And she's so, I don't know.
It's just artful. It's just artful.
She's interpreting.
In a way it works on both levels. She is interpreting and telling you a story, yes. But she's also, and I say this as a term of respect, she's a song stylist. And yes, let me put it this way. She's a musician. So Bette is singing music and she's using her voice as an instrument to make beautiful music. It's not, you know, a lot of the singers that we talk about, the Patties and the Barbaras and stuff, like part of them is telling the story and part of them is maybe showing off how great their voice is.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not necessarily like painting a picture with their voice in this way, you know?
Yeah.
And Bette really, and you know, I railed against Barbara comparing her to Bette on that old standard For All We Know, not the Karen Carpenter For All We Know, which we love Karen and Shirley Bassey and Carol Burnett and random people doing, but the old standard For All We Know, which Barbara sang at the concert in 93 and just does a worthless version.
Just an
artless, heartless, snooze fest take on the song. As opposed to Bette's, which is on,
For the Boys,
is the opposite. I mean, I didn't even think it was a good song until I heard Bette's version. That's just exquisite, you know? And it's the kind, she's, that kind of song is the kind of assignment where she really shows up and does that kind of a performance. And that's exactly what Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most is. And it's just, it is exquisite. And it's amazing that she does that live.
Yeah. And like I said, she just sounds so good. And also worth mentioning, she doesn't just sit there and sing it. It's a very involved staging.
Yeah, with like lying on her back and like, you know.
Yeah, being filmed from above, and then she steps one foot off the step and then she ends up.
By the way, like very few performers could pull that off. Like, it's not really their brand, but Patty or Bernadette or Liza, or even in some ways Barbara, they could do the comedy bits Bette does. Maybe they wouldn't do Bette's comedy. They'd have to do their comedy, but they could do that kind of stuff. And if they'd got off their asses and learned theography, I mean, certainly Liza does choreography, they could do the big numbers Bette does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they all can sit on a chair and, you know, and just sing the fucking song, you know? But I don't think any of them could do this. What is this? Their eyes were watching God? I mean, she's lying on her back, like seeming to like pull the stem, you know, the petals from a flower. I mean, it's like this very kind of heavy-handed, like poetic, you know, it's a very arty. I mean, she's really putting herself out there and like, you know, it's a strong choice what very they do with choice. This number. And I don't think any of those people could do something this frilly.
Right.
You know? I mean, and yeah, Bette does it and pulls it off 100%. You don't doubt her for a second.
Can you imagine Barbara lying down on the stage?
I mean, the sad thing is not lying on the stage. I can imagine Barbara making these kind of Laura Ashley choices. But if Barbara did something this Laura Ashley, it would be so offensively bad that even Barbara would probably think better on it, you know? But Bette really gets away with it. I mean, it's just lovely and interesting and different, and it really goes well with the artful way that she sings the song.
Yes, absolutely. And then next she sings
Bed of Roses, which is another kind, yeah, I guess another ballad. And then,
and by the way, I mean that too, it's like, it's that's another one. It's the same with the song that preceded it, and they go with Spring Can Hang You Up the Most, and they go well together in a sense. They both kind of have the same mood. And both of them, and especially Bed of Roses, because that's more of a quote-unquote pop song, and it's from her album, Bed of Roses. I mean, it's sort of 90s pop, you know, 90s alternative pop. So it's not really in the vein of, like, From a Distance or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's so that, like, singer-songwriter-y kind of alternative pop. It's almost hard to imagine out of context that that song would fit so well into a Bette Midler show. I mean, don't forget, this is the same concert where a few minutes later she's going to be dressed as a mermaid on an electric wheelchair making dick jokes, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But Bette Midler is so able to encompass all those things together. And this is absolutely exquisite. I mean, it makes me appreciate the song in a way that I wouldn't have, even though I love it on the album Bed of Roses, but I wouldn't have thought that a live performance would be so captivating.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's also a really, really impressive vocal. It's one thing for her to do that on the album, but there was, I think I pointed it out to you while we were watching it. There was a line where she was like in chest voice, and then she goes up into this mixed voice, or even like really almost like a pure head voice, and then goes back down into the chest register without any breath and finishes the end of the line in chest with flourish. And it's yes. just such vocal, authoritative confidence. Like
confidence. You know,
think about, for example, Patti LuPone has a better, stronger voice than Bette Midler. Mm-hmm. If you had to take Patti LuPone's lungs and diaphragm and Bette Midler's lungs and diaphragm, and you had to choose one of them to last you for like an hour scuba diving, you would probably choose Patti's, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yet, even Patti, who can blow the roof off the place by exploding into an enormous crazy loud belt note in a straight tone chest voice on a very high note that goes bigger and louder and longer than you would have expected. And when you would have thought it would be over, then it releases the vibrato. And even then the vibrato sort of cascades longer than the orchestra is even playing. And you can't believe she did it for that long. There's still a little sense with Patti of doing it that somehow gravity is involved. Kind of the way like an amazing acrobat does a flip. You can't believe they did a quadruple flip. But they're still sort of, in a way, they're racing against the clock of gravity. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Whereas with Bette, there's something about this that is so artfully planned that it's like, she seems to just be completely in the driver's seat in this way. There's gravity is not factoring in. It's like she's just painting one stroke after the other. It doesn't have the tension of the thing that Patti LuPone does, which get, you know, so it's, I'm not shitting on Patti, obviously, but I'm just saying there's something that's so, it's so without tension. It's just like she sings to the end of that line in this way that is just so calm, and it just enables her to just do something that a lot of them couldn't do. And yet singers that do that kind of calm, artful singing tend to be more boring and don't have Bette's theatrical prowess.
Yeah, it's a nice balance. I mean, yeah. She's truly an artist, you know. She's not just one of those performers who's like a vessel, you know.
No, exactly.
or like a voice.
Exactly.
So then we go into this, which I have never heard this before, and I was loving it so much. She talks about movies and The First Wives Club, which, you know, was a big, big hit, box office success.
And all the stuff about the testosterone kings being toast yes. by Sunday, naming names of, I mean, it's funny because she says the people that were stars at box office.
That's so funny.
Bruce Willis, Steven Seagal. But I love that her production company was called All Girl Productions. Mm-hmm. And First Wives Club is this Bette Midler, Goldie Hawn, Diane Keaton. I mean, we were talking about when we quarantined it, how we were taking it from the patriarchy and proclaiming the actual like classic that it truly is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I love that Bette is leaning into that and embracing that in this moment that, you know, they were, they were not supposed to do better than those big testosterone movies that they opened against, but they grossed $100 million. And, yeah. You know, I love that it's this like power for women and gay men moment.
Yeah, exactly. So she sings Everything's Coming Up Grosses, obviously a parody of Everything's Coming Up Roses, and going into, of course,
thrilling,
You Don't Own Me.
Thrilling,
signature
every,
song.
Everything's
from
Coming
the movie.
Up Grosses, I have to say, is maybe the best. I mean, I was like squealing with delight. I mean,
it's so good.
I'm in a hit, a big fucking hit. And baby, you know, Everything's Coming Up Grosses for me, so fuck you. It's so incredible.
It's amazing.
I just love her just like savoring that. And yes, and then You Don't Own Me. And that, by the way, You Don't Own Me. Oh, I didn't do my homework. I meant to compare it to how she does it on the For the Girls album.
Because
I couldn't remember
that was on there.
I couldn't remember how that was on that album. But it's a great version of You Don't Own Me. And it made me really mad that this was not an album also.
You mean this concert?
Yeah, this should have been a live concert.
Yeah, it really should have been. You know, it's so also interesting thinking about, not only is Bette, you know, legendary, she started out as a live performer, you know, with kind of the comedian stand-up chops, and she's also a best-selling recording artist, but she's also a movie star. And it's like those three threads she kind of weaves together to create this braid of, you know,
I like that
showbiz fabulousness throughout the night. And whether, you know, some of her fans like us are a fan of all three of those elements, but some are just fans from movies. Some are just fans of her music work. So, you know, there's something for everyone, but the way she weaves it all together and uses each of those elements of her self and her identity and persona as a star and a singer and an artist, and creates a show, like you're saying, that's so artful, but so high energy and entertaining. It's just really extraordinary and you know.
I mean, Bette is just so unique because she was born and became a star in a time when we no longer had the kind of entertainment where somebody could just be like a singer and a star and do these big shows and be huge, you know. And like the old school sort of, you know, in the era of rock and roll, you had to be a musician and you had to be a songwriter. And, you know, Barbara became famous so young that she kind of got in under the wire.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And, you know, Bette was able to be enough of a rock and roll singer and enough of a counterculture figure that she, in a way, got in under the wire too, even though it was, you know, 10 years later or whatever. And then she was able to become a movie star, you know, Barbara was a movie star in the 60s and 70s as a romantic leading lady. Bette Midler became a movie star as an above the title character actress in the 80s and 90s, you know. And like, so it's such a weird patchwork that made her career. And the fact that she's able to have these live shows that utilize all those things and sell out in Vegas or Madison Square Garden or wherever, you know, I mean, it's the thing that eluded Liza, you know, like, you know, Liza in a way sort of started off on like the Barbara track, but she didn't get in as well. And then, you know, not as successfully, or, you know, it ended and she wasn't able to translate it into the pop hits that Barbara had or the 80s and 90s comedies that Bette had. And so, you know, even at Liza's peak, she was playing Radio City, not Madison Square Garden. And, you know, that's a difference of what, like 15,000 seats.
And it's also worth mentioning, Bette is, you know, in this concert, I'm sure on HBO it was, I mean, it was on HBO, obviously, so it was mature content. But, you know, she drops the F-bomb a lot. She makes jokes about sex and her tits and all this kind of off-color humor. But then, you know, she's also, like, I knew her, of course, as a kid. The first time I ever knew who Bette was because of Hocus Pocus, which is Disney. And when I saw her at Madison Square Garden, it was the For the Girls tour. She did this whole Hocus Pocus bit with like the costume and the house. And I mean, she has such a range of not only appeal, but like what she can get away with. You know, it's like she's done Disney movies, but yet she's also a raunchy, like back in the day, like this kind of sexed up, like, you know, foul mouthed comedian. I don't know. It's not like people who are like, well, we're not going to go see her because she's too dirty or she, I mean, Bette is someone that's like a household name as well as, this edgy, kind of groundbreaker from back in the day.
Well, and she jokes about it, how like now she's got to be respectable, you know? But I mean, you know, that was the change. I mean, when she made The Rose and then, you know, started doing all those movies in the '80s and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Beaches was a more family-esque film in a way than stuff.
Beaches,
you know,
too.
She did change her limits a little bit, you know. I mean, also, she was older, you know, and she was a mom and whatever, and it was the 80s, you know. But although I have to say, she did a bunch of material on this about sort of, like, making fun of, like, political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
And her 90s take on that I enjoyed, whereas now I have no patience for that when people do that, including her.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting to notice.
Yeah, it was like the "Oh, I worry" monologue.
Yeah.
"Oh, I worry," and then she would go off on something.
And okay, so then she sings The Rose, and I have to say that if you had asked me from my memory or just my expectations going to watch this for the first time in 20 years, whether The Rose was something I was excited to watch her do, I would have said absolutely not.
Mm.
And I could not have been more just staggeringly moved by it. I thought it was so gorgeous and expressive and moving. And I realized, like, Bette is one of the few people that I can really enjoy an inspirational ballad from.
Mm.
Like when Bette, I guess it's along the same lines of like enjoying the Laura Ashley, like their eyes were watching God choreography for Spring Can Really Hang You Up the most. Like I will just give Bette a long leash, and maybe it's because she's foul mouthed and edgy. So she's kind of earned the right to be sappy too, in a way.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a balance. It's like, you're kind of ready for this now because she's given you these high energy performances. And then she kind of goes to this moment of, okay, maybe it's a little sappy, but it's quiet.
It's not just the balance, because other people could balance it and then they wouldn't get away with it. There's something about her. What's special to her is that she can actually really fill both of those spaces in an authentic way. And it made me wish that Bette had played the witch in Into the Woods, because I mean,
she should have been it in the movie.
She probably would have some like cheesy mugging moments that would be annoying. Although she would be pretty hilarious in like the rap and stuff. But when Bette would sing Children Will Listen, I would not be like, a third inspirational ballad in a row. I would be like so excited to hear her do it.
I would love to hear her sing that song anyway.
Yeah, she still should.
Yeah, I love that. And there's a part of The Rose that always gets me. If it's like a dissonant chord or like a minor, I don't know how to the right word for it, but it's on when she sings Taken. It's like, da da da, won't be taken. And there's some sort of suspension or chord change or something that happens there that is just so beautiful. And that part always, always gets me, a little pang to my soul.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, so then she does her first costume change, I believe, and she just puts on this little kind of Empire waisted dress over her existing costume.
A muumuu.
Yeah,
and right, a short muumuu.
A short muumuu, a shumu. Yeah. And then she talks about gypsy and burlesque, which she describes as vaudeville with an X rating. And
well, then she does that number, Pretty Legs and Great Big Knockers.
Yes,
which goes on for a very long time with a lot of burlesque business interspersed.
Yeah, and it goes on way too long.
It's
and
done
she does
well, but
Ernie and Louie.
It's for me, this section was too, like,
yeah.
I I think that, like, this didn't work for me. It was the first time I was, like, disengaged, because it felt like it was literally, she's just like, well, we got to entertain them, so let's think of stuff we can do. You know, and I need higher stakes. I need to feel like you're actually, there's something important that you want to convey to me, even if it's just comedy or something, but it has to feel more like it comes from a personal place of investment. And this just feels like it's just shtick for shtick's sake.
Shtick. It's very shticky. However, I was feeling so disengaged and so bored because it was going on so long, but then she ends with that blind man joke, which was so funny that I kind of forgave it a bit. But
yeah.
Then she sings I just wrote down the Doctor song by Mark Shaiman, which I cannot remember what that is.
Oh, it's like, a doctor, my daughter's marrying a doctor.
Yes.
She did it recently on some, like, COVID thing, and so did Mark Shaiman, actually. It's a great song. It was actually easier to appreciate on YouTube than this concert, where it's sort of sandwiched in, and it's just, like, goes by really fast. But it's a very, very funny Mark Shaiman song. But that's just kind of part of, like, the bigger, like, Pretty Legs and Great Big Knockers, like, medley section, isn't it?
Yes.
Because then
she does the dance with the girls with the pasties on their tits. And it's very, I was reminded in that moment of Liza at Radio City, where she has all those ladies up on stage with her, and she's, like, frazzled trying to organize them.
I'll give this to Liza. Liza's thing with the ladies, however cheesy the conceit may have been, it was at least a conceit that gave it context. The story was that Liza was doing a live concert, and these girls were interrupting it, and they wanted to be in the show, and then they won her over, and she let them be in the show. And Liza committed to that 100,000%, and I was completely invested in that moment. And this just felt like showbiz bullshit. I think I like that comparison, because I think the Liza thing worked much better for me.
Yes, you're right. And then Act One closer, which I was so surprised that this was, like, the closer of Act One, Rose's turn.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I mean, I like I said to you last night, I have not seen Bette's Gypsy, which I can't believe. So that's next on my list, or we could even corn stream that. But
although, as I said, there are several gypsies we could corn stream.
True that. So, you know, it's so funny. I'm pretty sure I have to go back and check the receipts, but I'm thinking, did Barbara close Act One with Rose's turn when she was at Back to Brooklyn at Barclays?
Maybe, but didn't Barbara do, like, a bullshit, like, not really Rose's turn?
It was like a medley, I think, but
fucking Barbara.
Oh my God, now I'm going to go back and look. Barbara's making that up.
A lot of people have said they would love to see me sing Rose's Turn, so we're going to do 45 seconds of it.
Yeah, I'm going to sing it all right. Okay, so Act Two opens with one of my favorite Bette songs, Drinking Again.
Mm.
And there's a complete tiny little set happening. There's a bar that she's sitting at, and a sign behind her that says karaoke tonight. And then she's wearing some sort of wool coat that's, like, buttoned up to her chin, which I immediately clocked. I was like, there's some sort of costume change or reveal that's going to happen. And sure enough, Drinking Again, and then she sings MacArthur Park. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's like a, you know, it's a throwaway. It's like a mashup. And a medley, yeah.
Yeah. And but then
she had a really funny line in that where she's like, because it took so long to make it.
Yeah. And sure enough, she whips it out. And by it, I mean her mermaid tail. And we go into the Dolores del Lago section.
Also long.
Also very long.
Although, funny enough, at the end of it, she does New York, New York.
I forgot that.
And I was like, is this the... I mean, she, as a joke, you know, it's Dolores with the girls. I mean, it's not like she's stealing Liza's number or anything.
Right.
But I was like, is this actually the only Candor and Ebb she's ever sung, other than, like, people's fantasies of her doing the movie of Chicago?
That's a good question. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of any others.
Me neither.
But yeah, though, I mean,
I will say I did enjoy watching her jump around and move around the stage within the constraints of the mermaid tail.
Totally.
Because it was pretty impressive. I mean, that can't be easy.
Yeah.
To keep your balance. But I do think, you know, I mean, that kind of bit with the mermaid tail was one thing. And then when you put the mermaid in the wheelchair, that's another thing. So I don't know. It was kind of too many bits for me. And then, yeah, the wheelchair choreography at the end, it did kind of drag on. But within the Dolores section, we get some great songs. Oogie Boogie Bugle Boy.
Boogie Boogie Bugle Boy.
Oogie Boogie is a Nightmare Before Christmas, which is on the album.
Divine Miss M. That's one of her hits, weirdly enough.
And then we get...
Well, I don't know if it's a hit, but it's one of her signatures.
And then it ends with kind of like a stunt. Like she is being held up by the girls and then they kind of flip her over in the air. It's, again, pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then she does a weird bridge over troubled water where the girls are lined up and she's laying across their back.
That was the whole joke of like with the girls. I mean, that was like MacArthur Park.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then Greatest Love of All, is that the last one she sings in that bit?
I mean, you know, it was all like, I gave her license to drive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and another thing about her career that's so interesting is because all this shtick and all the characters that she's developed and used over the years, I don't know if inside joke's the word, but it's like, if you're a Bette fan, you get it. And that's a way you're like, oh, yeah, she's doing Dolores now. Or, yeah. Oh, yes, now she's doing like the Soph and Ernie bit, you know? Yeah. And that's like a touchstone. It's like, I don't know, a little special moment she has with the audience because she's like bringing it back. And
yeah,
it's these things that she's developed over the years that's not just based in her hit films that everyone's seen, you know?
Right.
So you kind of have to have a full Bette history to fully appreciate.
Yeah.
Okay, then she does Ukulele Lady, which that's on Bathhouse Betty.
Yeah.
And when did that come out? When did that album come out?
Like 98.
So that's after this.
Yeah.
So she was just, you know, kind of testing material.
Yeah. I love that song though. And I love anytime she does anything Hawaiian, but I love that song and I love that album.
Yeah. I love that album too. That's a great summer album. I mean, Thighs and Whispers obviously is my higher power, but Bathhouse Betty is one I listen to a lot when I'm walking around the streets in the summertime.
Yeah.
And then we get another new dress and we get From a Distance, inspirational power ballad.
The belt was in peak form.
Truly. I mean, I've always loved Bette's singing voice, but I think maybe because I know I've listened so much to her early recordings and Bette at the Baz where she's just so like balls to the wall, kind of screaming. And that part of me always kind of thought, she knows how to use it, but it's not necessarily like a beautiful trained voice. But throughout this whole concert, she's never flat. She's never.
She's a better musician than most Broadway belters, you know?
Yeah. I mean, 2 hours of singing, she never once falters. I mean,
no,
it's
not at all.
Very impressive.
I mean, it's funny because I actually knew her more from the sort of like warm, syrupy 80s pop ballads than I did from... I had to then discover on my own the raunchy, campy rock and roll Bette Midler. So, I mean, I really thought of, like, this kind of voice and style first, you know? Mm. But it is just impressive just to see her do it live, you know, because it is so warm and expressive and beautiful all at the same time.
Yeah, and you know it's live. It's not, you know, it's nothing to do with the production or, you know, studio editing.
I was wondering, like, do you think Bette believes in God?
I think so. I mean, I think if you asked her, she would say yeah. I mean, in like a very kind of new agey From a Distance way.
Yeah, I hope it's like that and not just some like rote, like I'm Jewish.
You know, like I said, I have a lot of religious family members, Christian family members, and you know, this song could kind of have a Christian bend to it.
Oh, but for sure. I mean, there's no question, Bette. When I said Jewish, I meant in terms of her personal beliefs. There's one thing I know Bette would be smart enough to do is if she's recording an inspirational quasi-religious spiritual ballad, she would make sure it applies to the largest section of the population.
Absolutely. But, like, I know, you know, certain of my family members who love this song were like, well, but it's still, it's not really theologically sound because God's looking at us from a distance. Like, he's actually in our hearts, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, if you're thinking about it from that perspective, I know a lot of hardcore religious folk who would not, you know,
yeah, that's
agree with it.
I mean, that would probably be any religion. I mean, anyone that puts that kind of like a literal like test to the song. I mean, it's not a, you know, theological song. I mean, you know,
right. Exactly. I mean, it's like Barbara's second Christmas album, which I don't really love, but she has that song called One God. And I remember like in the liner notes, she was like, this is something I believe in, the idea of oneness and unity. You know, so it's very broad and watered down.
Yeah.
Speaking of from a distance, do you think Barbara, whenever Bette had such a hit with this, she was like, you know, I think I'll have Alan and Marilyn Bergman write me a song called From a Distance, and it'll be about my relationship with the audience.
Yeah. Can't get far enough away.
You know, that's how she wants you to see her.
Yeah, fun, faux show.
Okay, so Bette gives us the inspirational power ballad, and then she gives us a little, I don't know if you call it dessert, but for me it was, because she sings Do You Want to Dance, which I fucking love this song, and did not disappoint.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, like you mentioned earlier her breathiness. I mean, this is one of the songs, Do You Want to Dance?
Exactly.
You know, and the way she styles that is so divine.
So the divine Miss M.
Then To Comfort You, which was an interesting choice.
From Bed of Roses.
Bed of Roses, which I love that song.
Me too.
But again, it's that very kind of cheesy 90s alt rock, alt pop feel. Yeah. And I always love to listen to this song when I've been drinking and I'm laying in bed trying to go to sleep for some reason.
I mean, I guess I have to agree with what you say. I just love that album so much, and it brings me such happy, like, nostalgia, so I was just happy to hear it. But I guess there are other songs on that album I would have rather had her do live.
What year was that album?
96 or 97.
So it was between Some People's Lives and...
Oh, sorry, 95.
Okay, so... But so between Some People's Lives and Bathhouse Betty, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then she sings Stay With Me, Baby.
Yes, she does.
Which, again, just commits and goes in, and it's like she's, you know, in her 20s again. I mean, it's really, really incredible.
I mean, you know, like I said before, to be a star in the rock and roll era, you really needed to be a songwriter and a musician. I mean, an instrumentalist almost. I mean, there was very, you know, when you think of like a, you know, I don't know, Joan Jett or Stevie Nicks or Tina Turner even, well, mm-hmm. she's a little more like from the R&B roots, but you know, mm-hmm. Bette isn't what those people were. But when Bette sings a rock and roll song, nothing that she does could be done any better.
Yes. Yes.
Like,
absolutely.
Maybe she isn't who you had to be a rock star, but the way she performs rock and roll is of the quality of the greatest rock and roll stars.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and that's the reason, by the way, that over the years she had collaborations with the Bob Dylan and, and Mick Jagger and, Randy Newman and I mean, everybody, like,
did she and Mick Jagger fuck? Am I making that up?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know why I feel like I've heard that. Anyway, maybe not.
I mean, I feel like Mick Jagger fucked everybody, but I didn't think that Bette did, except maybe in the 70s for a little while. But I just love her singing of this. And I told you this last night, that when I saw Bette, the one time I've ever seen Bette was at Madison Square Garden in 1999. It was the Divine Miss Millennium Tour.
Yes.
And it was just a couple years after this, and I had been so obsessed with this video, and I went to that with really high expectations, and I had really bad seats. And I felt really disengaged from pretty much the whole show. And then right near the end, and I felt like I couldn't connect with her, you know, so far away. But right so near the end, exactly, she sang from a distance. But right near the end, she sang "Stay with Me, Baby," and it was as if she was sitting on my lap. I mean, it was so you know, transfixing, and seeing it in close up in this video is no less so. I mean, it's, you know,
totally
so powerful and thrilling, and it, you know, it's just it's everything you would want it to be.
Okay, then we get, I guess, the closing number, "Wind Beneath My Wings."
Yeah. It's funny, I was thinking in terms of that song especially, like, I wonder how much of the way I feel about Bette compared to the way I feel about Barbara is influenced by the fact that Barbara never had a pop hit when I was old enough to know or care. So to me, Barbara is somebody who had pop hits in the old days and had been a Broadway star and now was sort of like easy listening. And like, I liked her old work and I liked her new stuff as a little bit of like a camp curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, and I still liked her like as a diva, you know, but like, but it seemed to me that basically Barbara's like creative fertile period was long gone before I came around, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Bette, I mean, you know, I grew up with Bette as a movie star. And then when I was 12, Beaches came out, and before I even saw Beaches or knew about Beaches, every single radio station was playing "The Wind Beneath My Wings" all the time. Like, that was an inescapable number one, crazy, dominating the world pop hit. Like, later on, like, "I Will Always Love You," you know?
Yeah.
It like, it took over that summer or whatever that was, you know?
Yeah.
And then "From a Distance" was a really big hit too, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was a couple years later. So I think it's like one thing for you to know for a fact Barbara had a pop career.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different to know something than to live through it in terms of that, you know? And I was just thinking that when she was singing "Wind Beneath My Wings," it's like when Barbara sings "Evergreen," I might as well be watching her sing. I might as well be watching Patty sing "Don't Cry for Me" or something, you know, or not even "Don't," you know, that's a bad example because of Patty, what, you know, but like, I might as well be watching Liz Callaway sing "The Story Goes On." You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like, this is like a really beautiful song that she sings better than anybody else that she originated in something she did in the past.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to like, oh, this song was my moment when I was 12, and not just my moment because I'm weird and gay, but like my moment, like the whole world was like living this song, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really interesting point. I mean, because there are songs that for me, those songs in my adolescence or whatever were, I mean, Celine Dion's "My Heart Will Go On." I mean, that's a song that
totally,
I remember I have such vivid memories of being at the skating rink on some sort of class field trip.
Yeah.
And that song came on and I lost my fucking mind,
totally.
You know, because it was just this pop culture moment. And I loved the movie Titanic, and, you know, I'm not that into Celine now, but I mean, she was at that time, like, oh my God, Celine Dion was like a diva. And she was someone who, you know, that had this hit song, and I, as a young third grader, whatever age I was a part of that, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So then the encore, I guess, is "Glory of Love."
Also from Beaches.
I haven't seen that in so long. I need to give it a rewatch.
I love that movie.
Was that a musical as well? They did a musical adaptation.
Yes, but I don't
attempted.
But I think that was misguided.
Yeah. I mean,
well, I don't I say that, but I have no idea. But the first Wives Club to me feels like something that demands to be made a musical. Whereas Beaches, I'm like, oh, they're looking for projects.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a good idea. I mean, I was about to say I never read the book, but weirdly I actually did read the book.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a book.
Yeah. The first Wives Club was a book too, actually.
Right.
You know what it is? Because Beaches already is a musical. That's why I'm annoyed by them making a musical out of Beaches.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean, what does a musical mean? It doesn't have diegetic songs, you know, but like, like she's not like, I want my career on Broadway, but I also want to keep this marriage. You know, it's not like a musical, but like, there's all these songs that are performed in the movie by Bette Midler that are part of what we love about it and what made us remember it, you know?
Right, so, Under the Boardwalk, Glory of Love.
Industry Charity, Otto Titzling. I mean, it goes on and I Still Got My Health. Baby Mine. I mean, it's really a lot of music, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's a different situation with First Wives Club, which is just screams to be a musicalized, but it's not a musical. I mean, yeah, they kind of sing that one song, but barely, you know?
Barely, yeah. One other thing I noticed about Bette that I love, Bette, you know, Bette really knows how to receive the love from the audience, and she really takes it in, and you can tell it means something to her. Maybe not quite in such a, I don't know. And when Liza receives the love from the audience, and it's, I mean, she's a little overwhelmed by it, I feel. And it can get to a point where she's like, you know, okay, like I'm, you know, let's continue. Bette when I saw Bette at Madison Square Garden, I remember her being like, please keep applauding. I'm a bottomless pit, you know, like I'll take it all. And I feel like Bette really kind of even as the concert goes on and progresses, it's like, she feeds off that applause and the love from the audience. And whereas someone like Barbara, I feel like the applause means nothing to her. You know, she just literally wants it to be over.
Well, I mean, it's also like, you know, Bette has been in show business in the sense of the business. I mean, you know, for all of Bette's glamorous triumphs like this, Bette has had, you know, she played gigs that weren't sold out over the years. I mean, you know, Bette's been constantly touring in concert on and off for the last 40 years. And that's been how she's made her living. And there's been ups and downs. And she, you know, whereas I think Barbara is sort of like, you know, she was a kid, she was struggling, she was fighting. All of a sudden she exploded like a supernova. And like, you know, for the most part, everywhere she's ever appeared since then has been like a global event, completely sold out. People mortgage their houses and drop dead to get there. You know, so it's a little bit like, okay, like it's almost like she could take it for granted, you know?
Yeah.
And it's weird to compare it with Liza because it's like, I think with Liza, there's just so much else going on in terms of like her, like mental and physical, like well-being and like emotional state and the audience. And I'm not saying it Bette or Barbara aren't crazy or fucked up or whatever, you know, maybe they are, but with Liza, it's such a part of what she does on stage. And the audience is so plugged into like Liza's like fragility, but also like triumph over fragility. And so like, you know, every Liza performance is like you watch somebody perform open heart surgery and the patient lived. You know, or like to put a better spin on it, like a baby being born, you know? Yeah. But like, it's just, everyone's gone through something together in a Liza show. And that's not what happens with Bette or Barbara, you know?
No, not at all. Anyway, but yeah, I'm so glad we watched that. I, you know, my love for Bette has grown even more. And especially this time of year, like I've always said, Bette is so summer for me. She's Fire Island. She's, you know, pounding the streets of New York, walking around, bebopping to her tunes on my Spotify.
Yeah.
So anyway, listeners, you can find it on YouTube or where do we watch it?
Daily Motion. Which, by the way, there is a Daily Motion app on Apple TV and probably other devices like Roku or whatever. So that made it easier to watch that version because that version was a little better than YouTube. Because I know sometimes if you try to do Daily Motion on your phone or your device or whatever, and then you want to like mirror it to your TV, it's just like yet another Wi-Fi connection to fuck you up. But you can actually do Daily Motion directly on the TV.
And I, you know, at first I was like, oh, this isn't crystal clear, but it didn't really distract me or bother me at all.
It bugged me. I'm really angry.
I am so angry.
I'm gonna say this now, but I'm gonna tweet it too to hopefully promote this fucking episode. I'm gonna say I can forgive Bette Midler for supporting Mike Bloomberg, but I cannot forgive her for not making Diva Las Vegas streamable.
Yeah, yeah, or an album.
Well, that's another conversation.
one battle at a time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners. Thank you, Benjala.
Thank you, Daniel.
And yeah, we'll see y'all soon.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be. And be sure to check out our new twice-weekly live stream video chat, Tuesday, Thursday, April, August.
This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer, B-E-N... R-I-M-A-L-O-W-E-R.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Because Nolan with an A is an ass.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.